The lights, it's Sunday night, and welcome in to SEC Sunday Night, here with you every week at 8 o'clock, bringing you the best from the best. This is the best league in college sports, Craig, and we are proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law, hdlawsc.com. here at SEC Sunday Night, we want to have a casual conversation for the serious sports fan. We know that many of you out there really love the game, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, of course. Maybe it's equestrian or gymnastics. We'll throw in anything. Craig's going to talk lacrosse, even though that's not in the SEC. If you love sports, but you need to just kind of step back sometimes and have a casual conversation with other people who have the passion that you do, you've come to the right place. And when you go to Hewitt Domodiros, then you'll find the same thing there. You're going to find a laid-back, welcoming conversation, but passionate about your story and winning the case for you. Tens of millions of dollars have been won for clients across the state of South Carolina. Hewitt Domodiros Law, hdlawsc.com. I'm Rob Williams. He is Craig McMichael. Craig, what's going on? How are we doing tonight?
I'm great. You know what I had for dinner tonight?
Tell me about
it. Taco Bell. We went to the T-Bell, the little one and I.
So we're feeling good.
It didn't disappoint. Honestly, like, yes, is there better Mexican food? Absolutely. But guess what? When I go to Taco Bell, I know exactly what I'm getting. And here's the best part.
Yeah, indigestion.
Eat your whole meal. You know, here's the shocking part, though. Have you tried the little Cinnabon donuts things with
Absolutely.
Cream cheese?
Absolutely.
She took a bite and she's like, nope, not for me. You know what
More
that meant?
Dad. More yep. for dad.
More for dad. So it's not so bad. I know you also had 80 degrees. We had like 55 degrees this week. And then yesterday we got 2 inches of snow. So
love it. Well, that the wins and losses, Craig. And speaking of wins and losses, it's time to take a look at the league highlights. In baseball on Friday, Arkansas fell to UT Arlington. Tennessee goes down to number one UCLA. And Ole Miss drops one as well. Vandy lost to UC Irvine. Auburn, number seven in the country, lost to Nebraska. But on the bright side, Florida handled business against number 17 Miami. South Carolina beat number 15 Clemson, and number 3 Texas gets the win over number 9 Coastal Carolina. Saturday, the highlights are this: Clemson beats Carolina, Bama over 19 Oregon State. The Gators take care of the Canes again, and that game was canceled today, so they win the series 2-0. Arizona gets Vandy, and UCLA beats number 11 Texas A&M. Today, we had a couple of things. Coastal beat Ole Miss. Gonzaga beat number 13, Oklahoma. Clemson takes the series against South Carolina. And as of my last check, we still had a game in extras. And I was just going to take a look here and see if that finished up.
While you're looking, I want to give a quick shout-out to my Georgia State Panthers, who knocked off Georgia Tech this week, proving who is the number one university in Atlanta. Go Panthers.
There you go. Number one UCLA over number 4 Mississippi State, 3-2 in 10 innings. In women's basketball, we saw things kind of get wrapped up. We're going to talk about this here in just a minute. We do have the tournament bracket for you here. The first week of March, culminating in a championship game on March 8th. That is next Sunday. And so we will talk a little bit of women's hoops as we move forward. The field is set there for the conference tournament in Greenville. Men's basketball.
Were you shocked to see Auntie Kim with a matchup with the Gamecocks in the semifinals, not the finals?
Nothing shocks me about Auntie Kim anymore, Craig. In men's basketball, I'll highlight a couple of things here before we jump over to Matt Anderson and our breakdown of the South Carolina Gamecocks. Kentucky beat number 25 Vanderbilt. Both Georgia and Missouri get off of the bubble. We'll ask Matt about his thoughts on bracketology a little bit as we close out in a minute. I would love to get his thoughts. 17, Bama gets past number 22, Tennessee by 2. Auburn falls again to Ole Miss, landing them squarely in that first four, according to Joe Lunardi. And number 7, Florida absolutely lit up number 20, Arkansas. 111 points out of the offense from Florida is just insane in the way that they're playing. So that wraps up our look around the league. And on that note, we will bring in our friend Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock himself. Matt, what's going on? I know you guys just got off the air. We are fortunately are here to talk about football. And so I'll leave the baseball discussion. And of course,
What happened in basketball this weekend? Did anything happen in basketball this weekend?
Matt, I regret to inform you that Craig covers Georgia
and Clark County PD didn't get the dogs this time, baby.
Woo! No, hey Craig, man, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Matt.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a victory lap you should be taking beating South Carolina this year. Really,
we take what we can get. Okay, I'm just gonna be honest.
I get it. Yeah, I'm happy I was able to slide over here tonight. Rob hit me up earlier this week. Anytime y'all want me here, I love the show. I love everything y'all are doing. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you being on. I won't rip on anybody anymore. I'll wait till you leave, and then I'll just give it all to Rob when we're done. So
it's been a tough run for South Carolina on the men's side of sports, especially the major ones here for a while. So look, man, rip away. It's what everybody else does in the state of South Carolina. That doesn't cover the Gamecocks or like the Gamecocks.
Well, you know, it says a lot, Matt, that we are working through previews of every football program in the SEC, and that gives us 16 weeks of content in terms of segments, but it also means that we kind of work backwards. And in working backwards, here we are in week 2, and we're already talking Gamecocks. So that's not necessarily a good reflection of what happened last year. But all things aside, there is some hope and positivity surrounding the South Carolina football team in Columbia moving into 2026. There's kind of three key questions that we've zoned in on for every program that we're looking at. And we want to start by looking at the coaching staff. Shane Beamer made a lot of moves because he had to. In some cases, there were some departures and there were some people that were relieved of their duties. And so when you look at all of those coaching changes, what sticks out to you, even as we still continue to see them with special teams and Matthew Smiley coming in just last week, what sticks out to you about these hires? And is there one or two in particular that you think are the difference makers for the Gamecocks in 2026?
I think you have to start with offensive coordinator Kendall Briles. This, in my opinion, is going to be Shane Beamer's first legitimate college offensive coordinator in his time at Carolina. Now, Kendall Briles is known as an innovator. He's known as someone that runs a fast, quick pace, easy to understand offense. And we can look at his time in Arkansas at TCU, even going back to Baylor, and we can see highs and we can see lows. But for Shane Beamer, he needs strong coordinators around him. He's not known as an offensive or defensive guru. Like, look, he made his bones as a special teams coach, and now he's a head coach, and I think that he has a lot of great, great characteristics as a head football coach in the SEC. But there's no doubt that Kendall Briles is a necessary upgrade, especially over Shula last year at South Carolina. And you could even say Dowell Loggins and definitely Satterfield before him. So I think it all starts with Kendall Briles. I'm a big fan of bringing an offensive line coach with you that knows your system inside and out. And there's no doubt that Randy Clements, Clem, as he's called around the program, knows what Briles wants to do. He's brought in analysts that are former Baylor offensive linemen, NFL draft picks, first-round picks. I think that they'll get this offensive line moving in a cohesive direction. I'm a big proponent that you don't need the best offensive line in the SEC to be effective. You just need communication, and you need to be able to play to your strengths. And when you have a Lenore Sellers back there, that can innovate, can move around the pocket, can make things happen with his legs and his arm, that this offensive line just needs to be serviceable. For far too long, the South Carolina offensive line has been a turnstile. So I think the two key hires were Kendall Briles and Randy Clements. Then you move over to Stan Drayton at running back coach. He's been at a who's who of programs. He obviously knows what talented running backs look like. He can adapt to any scheme. He's shown that over his career. So known as a good recruiter, and I still want to see him recruit, because at South Carolina, they haven't signed an in-state running back in quite a while, and they're going to have to do that. They're going to have to capitalize on two really good running backs in the state of South Carolina. I want to see how Stan Drayton recruits to South Carolina, not Texas, not Penn State, you know, not where he's been before. Then you look down here and Deion Barnes, I mean, what can you say about, you know, the numbers he's put up at Penn State, the number of players he's had drafted, the development. He's a young and upcoming coach. I like him. And then the new special teams coordinator. I like when an NFL guy comes back to college. It's different rules, but I think that where they can make their bones is the scouting. When they're looking at, you know, what an opposing team does on special teams, they're going to see quickly who's a really good special teams player and who's not. And maybe they can scheme up advantages to have those pressure situations. Because when you're coming from the NFL to college, you're quickly going to see who that walk-on is on special teams that doesn't have the athletic ability to necessarily, you know, be an all-star special teams guy. Some of them are, some of them aren't. So really it's Kendall Briles, is how fast can he get Lenore Sellers in sync with the offense? That's the biggest question for South Carolina right now. There's no doubt Lenore Sellers, outside of maybe five games as a starter, has looked in control and feeling confident. So that's the first step. They need to be locked into a room together 10 hours a day, breaking down film. And then Wednesday, when spring ball starts, they need to hit the ground running. They don't need to spend 5, 6, 7 practices installing the offense where Lenore is learning on the fly.
Yeah. And I think you look at it like Kendall is that big veer and shoot guy. And I feel like the SEC has really become like a veer and shoot league now. I mean, we see versions of it basically throughout most of the conference. So I think that'll be good. And I think one of the benefits that South Carolina is going to, like you talked about, the offensive line, where they're not going to have to be great. Look no further than Ole Miss. Ole Miss has not been great along the offensive line. They run a version of the veer and shoot. It's not exactly the same as what Briles has run, but it is something different. Is, as you look at the Briles hire, is that the fix that South Carolina needs from 2025 with 4-8? Is that consistency on offense? Is that Briles, you know, being able to, you know, get Lenore in those good situations, whether it's run or pass, to be able to get going, that's really going to unlock that team?
I'm not necessarily going to say it's going to unlock that team. I think unlock is a very strong statement. But South Carolina has been so bad on third down conversions, time of possession, that sort of thing. And when I say time of possession, I don't necessarily think the Gamecocks need to hold the ball 35, 40 minutes a game. I think you can win that way. But what you need to see is 40, 50% of points scored on drives. And look, South Carolina at special teams hasn't had a great kicker lately. That's definitely impacted the way the game's been called, because you're going for it on maybe 4th and 8 when it'd be a 52-yard field goal instead of, you know, trying to get a first down, keep that drive going. So we'll see. I think Kendall Briles has a lot of talent at wide receiver. I think Lenore Sellers is a very capable quarterback. I think if Lenore Sellers was in the transfer portal, he would have been the number one, number two, number three quarterback in the portal. So when you think what Kendall Briles is walking into, Lenore Sellers is still a piece of clay, and he can try and mold that. And if he can do it, then I think you can see the Gamecocks maybe get up to 30 points per game. That's where they need to be. They need to be able to consistently get 28 to 33 points a game on offense. So often the Gamecocks have had a high points per game average or higher, but if you look at it, it's special teams and defense scoring a lot of points. That can't happen this year. So to unlock South Carolina, that's what he's going to have to do. Move the chains. There's going to be plenty of 3 and outs. We know that. But one thing we also know is that with Torian Gray back there, a seasoned defensive backs coach, with Clayton White, who seems to be a pretty good defensive coordinator, I don't think the defense is going to have to play perfect with Kendall Briles. For so often, there was no room for error with the defense. If you let two touchdowns go over your head, and now all of a sudden it's a 10, 14-point game, the offense wasn't able to chip away at it. I think Kendall Briles can help in that regard.
Matt, when you mentioned Lenore Sellers a lot, if we take Lenore Sellers, Nick Harbor, and Dylan Stewart off the board, names that everybody around the country and people watching this show who are fans of other schools are gonna come to mind for them when they think about South Carolina. Who are you watching? Who are the playmakers on this team as we move into 2026? Maybe somebody that was great on the team last year that people don't really know about outside of the South Carolina fan base, or maybe it's a newcomer that you have your eyes on. Is there anybody that you would circle or zero in on?
Yeah, we can start at wide receiver. There are a number of wide receivers that I'm pretty excited about, but I'll start with Donovan Murph. Donovan Murph, I've watched him in 7-on-7 camps. I've followed his high school career. The guy, if you don't know this, and I think a lot of people do, he's Alshon Jeffrey's cousin, and he brings a lot of Alshon skills to the table. Donovan Murph is huge for South Carolina. I think he's going to take that next step. He can be an alpha. I'll be very honest there, and I think that second-year jump will happen. Jaden Sellers, Lenore Sellers' brother. I'll tell a quick story that I've told on Gamecock shows before, but I got to know the former head coach Drew Marlowe at South Florence through some stuff in Florence. That's where I'm from, Florence, South Carolina. And he said when he took over South Florence's program that Jaden Sellers was the only guy that could catch a pass from Lenore's. He said, maybe it's that brother bond playing in the backyard, but he knew Lenore Sellers was a high four-star, five-star kid, the most talented quarterback he's ever going to coach in his career. And Jaden was the only guy that could catch from him. And Jaden showed in glimpses last year that he can be productive. And anytime that you have that brother-to-brother connection, Rob, I think that, it's the eyes in the back of your head type thing. So I think at wide receiver, those guys can be pretty good. I think DJ Black is a guy that came in the transfer portal. And he's somebody that's going to quickly understand the system. He's been at South Carolina before. He knows what Shane Beamer's all about, but he's had success outside of South Carolina. Looking at running back, I do think that Jerron Howell is going to take a leap. I think Matt Fuller is going to take a leap. I think those two guys at running back were just 1 year away from being pretty good. Let's go through here. Offensive line, I know we'll talk about here a little bit. We can't have a South Carolina conversation without talking about the offensive line. Linebacker. I really like Sean Murphy. I like Justin O. I don't pronounce his last name. I like Justin O. And then going through there's going to be some opportunities there. And Fred J.R. Johnson's a kid that the coaching staff loves. He needed to get some more reps and play an entire season. But I think the linebackers are going to be pretty stout. And then, Troy Pike's flashed a defensive tackle against Clemson. Coaching staff loves him. Gabriel Brownlow Dindy, another guy that flashed. It's going to be time for those defensive tackles to help Dylan Stewart. So those are some names off the top of my head, going through the roster that I would talk about.
Yeah, I think that this wide receiver room is actually a lot deeper than what people might realize. And you got to think guys like Donovan Murph and Jordan Gidron, who you didn't mention, are guys that came in early. And so when you talk about Murph taking that next step, this should really be his first year in college. I talked to Jerron Howell a couple of years ago when he was in the transfer process. This is a kid that averaged almost 8 yards per carry at South Carolina State, and it doesn't really matter the level to me. He had about 100 carries for over 800 yards, and so you subtract a little out there for stuff, and you get like 7.9 yards per carry that he had at that level. It's in there, okay? Yeah. It's in there. He's built like Brandon Wilds. For those of you who maybe are South Carolina fans that are watching this. And I think I agree with you, Matt, that that's a great great assessment of some of the playmakers that are there. You mentioned the offensive line, so I'll go there just really quickly before we zoom out and look big picture. A lot of change, a lot of guys out. You mentioned Randy Clements before as a big addition. The Kendall Briles system requires a specific type of offensive lineman. As Craig kind of mentioned before, this style of offense is – running across the SEC, but one of the things that is kind of the hallmark is that they want to move. And so you have to have guys that can not just move between the whistles or while the play is happening, but between the whistles as well. You got to get to the next play and you got to move. And that's part of this process. What do you look at from a realistic standpoint, positive, negative, when you're looking at this offensive line group? Lots of newcomers, injury to the, obviously, to speak the leader in the clubhouse there. How does this shape up? How does this impact South Carolina going forward? Is the offensive line the make or break group of this team?
For me, I say this every year. I don't think it's necessarily as make or break as it has been, just because you had an offensive line coach that could recruit every blue chip guy in the country to South Carolina, but evidently had trouble developing for whatever reason. So you had a lot of talent there. Now, a lot of that talent walked out the door, and we don't truly know how talented they were, if I'm just being frank. But I say this every year with the offensive line at South Carolina, and honestly, for most programs in the SEC, I have to see it to believe it. I'm not going to go out on any limb and say this offensive line is going to limit sacks. I'm not going to say this offensive line is going to have X amount of pancakes. Because I don't know until I see it. But I do think that having, you know, as we mentioned earlier, Clem and Browse there, they should be better. I mean, you talk about guys that can move between the whistles. This Poku guy that came from East Carolina, he is a guy that I'm hearing a lot about. I think he could play any of the positions across the offensive line. I think they'd like for him to play guard. If in a stretch, they could probably get him over to tackle. Shedd Surratt is a guy that played a lot for South Carolina last year, and he's really good, y'all. He was injured. He's going to be a really, really good offensive lineman. I don't know if he's going to play tackle inside. They got, 7, 8, 9 offensive line transfers. I think if you look at the returning snaps across their career, across all of, you know, college football, South Carolina has the number one amount of snaps coming into the program this year. So they're going to have to figure it all out. Jacarius Pete going down, that's a big, big blow, because we've seen Josiah Thompson try and play right tackle. We know that as a freshman, he was a freshman All-American, you know, playing left tackle. I don't know if he can do that again. Yeah. I think that he might be a right tackle. I don't know if he can. Theoretically, he should be able to move the way you're describing, Rob. I mean, because he doesn't have very much fat on his body.
No, not at all. And he's 6'7". Yeah. He's a monster. And, you know, it's interesting you should mention both Poku from East Carolina and the true sophomore out of Gaffney, South Carolina, Shedd Surratt. I'll just take this time to shameless plug. Go to ITG.com and subscribe to the free newsletter that comes out daily. If you're a South Carolina fan, or even if you're not and you want to keep up, this is free insider information. And I was a part of a roundtable that's breaking down different positions on the ITG newsletter, Inside the Gamecocks, ITG.com, InsideTheGamecocks.com. I'll put that over here in the chat. But those were the two players. My returner that I'm intrigued by the most was Surratt, and my newcomer was Poku, because of versatility on the part of both of those players. Matt, as we kind of close up here, I know we got to get you out of here. When you look at the schedule, Craig and I are going to predict it here at the end of the show, and we're going to go through game by game. I'm not going to ask you to do that, but just give us, if you can.
You could send me your picks, though, if you want.
Okay, Craig.
It's a little early, right, Matt, to be picking schedules. This is what we do around here. We see how early we can jump on. What is the win total that will be defined as success in Columbia? Is there a number that Shane Beamer and crew have to hit to say this was a successful year?
Well, man, it's hard, because you look at the schedule. I do think this is the way you schedule for this type of team, right? When you have so many newcomers, you have a new offensive coordinator. Lenore Sellers needs to get comfortable. He needs to get, you know, greased up before you throw him to the wolves with potentially maybe another bad offensive line. We don't know yet. But, I mean, you got Kent State, Towson. Those are definite wins. I'll do it the way I do it. I do definite wins, and then I do swing games, and then, you know, just kind of do it from there. So Kent State, Towson should be wins. Mississippi State in Columbia, game 3, that should be a win. So you're looking at 3 right there. Alabama at home. Look, Alabama still has as much talent as anybody in the country. Now, do they put it all together? The game is away, so I'd probably lean towards a loss. I don't even know if I'd say that's a swing game. So you're looking at 3-1. Kentucky at home. Kentucky had Carolina's number for a while. It seems like that has shifted. There's a new coaching staff there. South Carolina should win this game, right? So you're at 4-1. Florida, I think the Gamecocks, this is a true swing game. I don't know what Florida is going to be this year. So let's go, 4-1-1. Then Tennessee, have they fixed their defense? If they haven't fixed their defense, you know, how good is South Carolina's defense going to be to stop Tennessee? Can they stop them from expanding that field? So that's a swing. So you're at 4-1-1. Oklahoma and Norman. Brett Venables is the best defensive coordinator, even though he's a head coach in college football. I think that's 4-2-2. Texas A&M, Gamecocks had him on the ropes in College Station. I think that's a probable loss. So you're 4-3-2. Arkansas, Gamecocks should beat Arkansas. They just should. The game's in Fayetteville. That makes it scary. So I'll say that's a swing. So no, you are 4-3-3. Georgia 4-4-3, and then Clemson. Clemson. I said this last year. I don't know who else was saying it, but I didn't believe in Clemson as a top 25 team in the preseason. Not because I covered the Gamecocks, but because they lost to every team with the Pulse last year, 2 years ago, and they brought everybody back and paid them lots of money, and there was no way for them to progress. There was no competition. So you look at Clemson, it's always a swing game. So what's that, 4-4-4? I think that Shane Beamer has to get to 8 wins. Honestly, I don't think a 7-5 season is going to be good enough for Gamecock fans. When you bring in an established offensive coordinator, you have Lenore Sellers, who, you know, might still be a top 10 quarterback in the country. I don't know where he stands. And, you know, Craig, you're an SEC guy. You watch him a lot, but, you know, I think Gamecock fans honestly didn't care if he left. And I think that's sad, because I do
that,
think
that's wild, because you look at like there's your cautionary tale, right? Like we talked about the Gators. Like you have to say it, like you like what Summerall has done and kind of like the momentum he has, but who's going to be the Gator quarterback? The backup quarterback from Georgia Tech. Was it Philo?
Yeah.
Philo.
Philo. Hey, Craig, let me flip this. Okay. So like take my Lenore Sellers.
Yep.
If you had Lenore Sellers in Gainesville this year with what Summerall's done, how would you feel about Florida coming into the season?
Oh, I'm thinking 8-9 wins. You know, I think that high of Lenore's, where like, to me, that sounds crazy, right? Like you're saying like, oh, Lenore's leaves, he leaves, where, you know, he would have been like, you know, I'm sure he would have gotten, you know, treated nicely to a basketball game with Uncle Lane down in Baton Rouge. So,
yeah, exactly. So look, I think you got to get to 8 wins. I think anything on top of that is gravy. But I do wonder if 7 wins is enough for Shane Beamer this year. I really do. And I don't think he can survive a 6-6. I think 8's the number. And I wouldn't be surprised if that number's 9 or 10, Rob, because it's gonna depend on how they win or how they lose.
What does right? the 8 look like?
Yeah, what does the 8 look like? If they're getting blown out by everyone they should lose to, and then, you know, they lose to someone they shouldn't, and then they squeak out a win, where's it going to be?
I think here's the biggest thing. As we move from 8 to 9 games in the SEC schedule, like you would have at South Carolina 3 games that you probably are going to chalk up as a win. Obviously, the Clemson one is always a toss-up, but like you would have, okay, cool, I've got 3 wins. I go 4-4 in the league. I'm at 7 already. Now it's like, okay, now I've got 2 wins, that 2 games that are a win. And now I've got that 9-game SEC schedule plus Clemson at the end. Like this is where the rubber's going to meet the road for a lot of those teams kind of in that middle tier of where it could really go sideways for them.
And Rob, you know this, I'll say this really quick. Shane Beamer's put that pressure on himself after the Clemson post-game press conference. He said they're going to be in the playoffs. So if you take the man at his word, what's the expectation?
Yeah. And half of me respects him for putting that, having that confidence, and you want your coach to speak that way. Yeah. But to your point, it does add pressure. One more thing I'll say, and we're going to get you out of here. You told me 8:30. I said you'd be early. I'll get you out 90 seconds early. How about that? To take this conversation full circle, the way things have looked in the other men's sports don't help the pressure cooker that is on this football program. And so if to your point about 8 wins, I think he could survive on 7 if baseball would have relieved the pressure. But that didn't happen. And ultimately it definitely didn't happen with basketball either. And you and I both know what we know about where this basketball program is headed next year. And I'm not sure that's going to be well received if things go the way that we think that it's going to go right now amongst the fan base. So heads are going to roll somewhere if men's sports continue to go that way.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard. Sorry for cutting you off there. It's going to be difficult, mainly because there is a case that could be made that all 3 head coaches at South Carolina and the primary men's sports should be not coaching in South Carolina next year. And that is what, 21 plus 10.
A lot of money.
I mean, $40 plus million before you even get to assistance, and you still got to fix the issues that are wrong.
And hire new people. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's about a $80 million problem that South Carolina's, you know, focusing in on right now. But we'll see. I mean, I said on my show tonight, I think that, you know, we already know Shane Beamer's safe for next year. But I do think that there's going to be one of the other two that won't be coaching for South Carolina next season.
Agreed.
If I can offer, and if I offer one word of encouragement to you both, there is one men's South Carolina team that's doing well.
Here comes
right now, your men's club lacrosse program is currently 7-1 and 5-0 in Columbia. So Gamecocks, if you are looking for a team in men's sports that is winning, South Carolina lacrosse has you.
There you guys, have it. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. The late night Gamecock himself, thanks, Matt Anderson with us.
Yep.
You can check him out every week at 7 o'clock here on the Chief Sports Network. Thanks, Matt.
All right. See y'all.
See ya. This is SEC Sunday Night. It's 8:30. We'll go ahead and hit a timeout right here. And when we come back, it'll be time for me and Craig to take on It Just Means More, Genius.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team!
Oh, man! The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live here with you every week at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks again to Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock, the late night Gamecock show here on the Chief Sports Network every week right before our show. They're on from 7 to 8. We're on from 8 until whenever I can get Craig to stop talking. Speaking of, Craig, did you bring your readers tonight? Because we are without Casey for It Just Means More, Genius. We are without Casey, although I think – given the events of the weekend in the South Carolina Clemson rivalry series, the best rivalry in all of college baseball, that he would like to be here right now, considering who he covers and the colors that he wears when he's not on our show.
Mississippi State.
But alas, he is not here to flaunt that orange. And so we'll move on to the boards. Let's begin in another rival territory of the Gamecocks, our featured team of the night, Athens, Georgia.
MBG says, Georgia gave Mike Bobo a raise. Donaldson Dog, Hall of Famer, by the way. Thank God we locked him down before some rival school poached him. For sure. Stunna Glockton.
Nice name.
Oh, great name. Have you ever heard of the song Number One Stunner?
Yeah.
That's a great song. Were you like first, second grade when that came out?
Yeah, something like that.
He's all conference, by the way. According to my research, Gunner threw 162 passes behind the sticks, which equates to $4,320.99 pay raise pass behind the LOS, line of scrimmage, for those of you that don't know. Crying, laughing emoji. Hell of a deal Bobo cooked up there. From Bulldog Baptist.
Another wow, we're just killing it. We're killing it with these names.
We are absolutely.
The handles are great tonight, guys.
Thumbs up from Big Daddy Jim, by the way. Could have used that 7 million or 7. Nope, that's 7 million. Nope, it's supposed to be 700,000. I think it's 7.
You just can't nope. count zeros.
700,000. This is why I'm an athletic director, not a math teacher. Could have used that 700,000 on a recruit. But instead, let's give it to our mediocre OC. Great idea. Chili dog.
Now
he's just a senior. Wish I could be average at my job and get a $700,000 raise. Thank you so much for putting the dollar sign in the comma. This guy can't absolutely get it.
How do you feel about the Bobo raise? As a Georgia guy, you know, you're more intimately involved with that program. Do you feel like it's a warranted thing? Are you a Bobo guy? Let's lay it out there. Is Bobo the key to offensive success in Athens? He has a mixed – it's a mixed bag of reviews amongst Georgia fans, but let's look at it from an analytical standpoint.
I like Mike. Like, he did a good job this year. You know, listen, he ran the damn ball, and they did a really good job. Had a good relationship with Gunnar Stockton. Did just fine. Do I wish sometimes it was a little more dynamic? Do I wish it was sometimes a little more free-flowing like we saw with Todd Monken? Absolutely. Do I wish sometimes that Buster Faulkner was in Athens and not Gainesville? Every single time. Thank you, David Soderquist. But I think Bobo was a pretty damn good OC. And here's the thing. He's got a great relationship with Kirby Smart. Bobo's not going anywhere. Kirby's not going anywhere. His kid's playing center. You know, it makes sense. It's just taking care of your guys. Schumann got a raise. I'm not sure what Schumann got a raise for. That defense has not been great the last 2 years. Been good, but not bulldog great.
Is this what we do, Craig? We just give raises until we fire? Is that kind of standard?
You just kind of keep taking care of everybody, making sure they're not going anywhere. I know Glenn had – I think his name cooled a little bit this offseason, but I know in the last two, I think especially before Belichick went to North Carolina – there's a lot of smoke with Schumann going over there. But, yeah, I think you just naturally you take care of your guys. And let's be honest, with what Boom got in Texas, some money freed up. So I think Boom got almost $2 or $3 million or something to go to Texas to be the defensive coordinator. Not bad. Not bad.
Okay. Let's go to Baton Rouge.
Who? Will Wade. Strong ass offer coming. Will Wade is returning to LSU. Bookmark it. Pear is coming home. This is from TigerBait 2010. He talks to Roos Weekly. This has been in the works for a long time. Some of you know I have the sauce. It's true.
All right, prepare there it is.
To Orchard. And whatever that thing is at the end, I don't know what that is.
This is the one. Look, forget everything he said other than I have sauce, .. It's true. That is the message board lingo that we needed. This is not just confirmed. This is not just sourced per sources. This is I have sauce. He doesn't care about what somebody else tells him. He's going to call the shots right here and now because he's that dude. Craig?
He is. He's not even spilling the tea. He's got the sauce. Is that Bernays? Or what kind of roux do you think he's got going on in New Orleans?
I thought Baton Rouge. Cane sauce? I don't know.
Oh, gosh. I could go for some canes tonight, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
How hot would you go?
I really could. I like it pretty hot. I don't want to cry, but I do want my nose to run.
So my nephew is a freshman at that school in Ann Arbor. We went out for chicken and waffles a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And we go there, and I get mine, like, extra hot or something. He gets his with no spice whatsoever. What is up with that?
You can't do that.
You can't do that. And that's what I did. So like, again, Uncle Craig. You
can't do that.
Uncle Craig had to walk him through. And guess what? We opened his eyes. He got a little heat in there. He got the syrup. And it was perfect.
Okay. I'm gonna put it up. You guys let us know. If you're listening right now and you want to just comment, this would be the easier way to do it, but I will put it on X as well. Do you like hot chicken? And is it okay to order it with no heat? Okay, Craig, let's move on to the Grove here.
From chicken and waffles to Oxford, Mississippi. MBG says, Ole Miss shouldn't fire Chris Beard. They should give him less NIL money. Don't fire Beard. OM575A, because OM575 was apparently already taken. VIP, by the way. We would owe him a ton on a buyout. Just cut back as an NIL next year and give it to football or baseball. He'll leave on his own. Is this a good idea, Rob? Should the Grove Collector just divert everything to baseball and football?
This is one of those arguments that I feel like I hear more often around the league as finances become a bigger piece in wins and losses. But no, I don't think so, Craig. I don't think that that's realistic. I don't think that anybody actually wants to dump a whole program. I do think that fans say this in the heat of difficult seasons, difficult tenures. But look, Chris Beard is actually a really, really, really good basketball coach. They're having a bad year. I'm not concerned with him or his ability to coach. If anything, he probably just, you know, needs more money. And that's the story of everybody's life these days. So, I mean, they don't have it. But the thing is, we've seen that they do have it. So it's maybe a lack of motivation coming from
Can you be good? Before we jump, and we sort of talked about that a little bit with Matt, can you be good in all three? Can you be good in football, basketball, and baseball?
Define good.
I'm thinking you're
tournament.
So playoff, tournament,
and baseball.
Yeah, tournament and baseball. I you know what I mean? Like, I think you're the upper half of the SEC.
Okay. Well, let's see who's going to do that. Georgia's probably going to do that. They just got off the bubble. Their baseball team, if I had to put money on it right now, is going to make the tournament. So that would be one example. Florida's going to do that. Not in football. They're not up in football right now.
Right.
But you're going to have basketball and baseball. So if they turn their football program around, is anybody sitting here saying Florida can't make the playoff? No, I'm not talking about this year. I'm just saying as a program. Like, if we did a five-year like forecast, what do we say? There's no shot they make the playoff in the next 5 years. No, nobody's saying that.
No.
LSU has the basketball issue.
Yep.
Currently.
And they've had a football issue, right? They've had a football issue.
Correct. But again, if we're doing five-year projections, nobody's saying that's impossible for them to get there.
So is it likely probably your 2 of 3?
Probably.
Probably two or three, that's what it is.
Texas is going to be – Texas probably looking to actually, yeah, Texas could be. They didn't make it in football, but they're right on the edge, and we have high expectations for them this year. So right. Do we count this basketball and baseball forward into the next year? And if they make the playoff with Arch in 2026, do you count that as all three? I don't know.
I think it depends on when you're making the argument. Does it help your argument to include it, or does it hurt your argument to include it? So
sure.
But you know, I think that's the interesting part, because I think you even look at a team like Georgia. Yes, they can do it in football. Basketball has been
they're projected
slowly growing, right?
They're projected nine seed by Lenardi. I'm going to get to that in just a minute, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that was an interesting question. Look at that. Every now and again, we go off the rails in a good way.
That was – you know what? There might be a first time for everything. Speaking of off the rails.
Oh, boy.
Let's get out of the league to hear what other people are saying about the league.
Oh, okay. Let's go to Miami. Maybe Carson Beck or the Cavender Twins have something for us. The Blue Buds are trying to keep Miami down. This is from Super Kane 6882, not to be confused with 867-5309. The SEC is and will continue to be immune from any and all NCAA bylaws. The more success Miami has, the more the Blue Bloods will pressure the NCAA into going after Miami for literally anything and everything. I fear this is our only potential downfall. Rob, are the Canes just a victim of the SEC?
Yep, that's what it is. The SEC is out to take down every potential national power that exists outside of the league. And so, sorry, Miami. You're a victim of the SEC. All right, we have one more that's not a board. But you threw it my way, and I think it deserves a little bit of attention. Our friend Chris Marler at Bern Funquist. If you don't know Chris and you're not following him, then you probably don't love SEC football. But if you're not already following him, go ahead and follow him. But go ahead and give this one a read, Craig.
You might as well tag him because he was asking what I was asking him about. But shout out to our guy Chris Marler, talking about the Plains, where our good friend Rob Williams has preached patience. Marler brings some sanity and some levity. Honestly, for a university and athletic department that has been so good at leadership, evaluation, and the hiring part of running a program, I am shocked that the NEPO hire Auburn made a month before the season didn't work out. I mean, the Harsin and Freeze hires were so great.
Okay. I'm going to push back just a little bit, not completely. The Harsin hire was not good. I think a lot of people would have hired Hugh Freeze. I don't think it was just Auburn. Now, did it work out? No. But I think that everybody looking at that on the surface when they brought him in went, yeah, this makes sense. This is a good hire. Nope. I don't think people were like, what are they doing? The Harsin one
revision. I will push back against you. I think the Freeze was a little bit of revisionist history. Yes, I think we thought about it. Yes, it should make sense. It should work. But Hugh was stuck at Liberty for a while. I mean, he was in the medical bed giving the thumbs up and, you know, on his burner doing whatever. But, like, it took Auburn to bring him back. He didn't really have a lot of other – I don't remember him being on a ton of those boards. But, you know, it goes to your guy, Stephen Pearl. You know, you've been preaching patience and that Auburn fans should be sane and take their time and let the process play out.
And they should. They should once again. They're coming off of a Final Four.
They've dropped 7 of 8, Rob, and it's an embarrassment that they are even.
And they lost a ton of talent. Janai Broome is not walking through that door. You have to be able to replenish that, and you can't do that in a month. When Bruce Pearl walked out.
So what did his dad do? What did his dad do all offseason? His dad just basically knew he was retiring a month before. He wanted to make sure Steven had the job so he didn't bring in any good talent.
Well, that's not the case. But you're not replacing a guy like Janai Broome, who is up for player of the year, just like that. It doesn't happen overnight. But to your point.
It should. If you want to be good and you want to be relevant, year in, year out.
It doesn't happen anywhere. But to your point, let's take a look at teams from the SEC. According to Joe Lunardi, mm-hmm. here are the teams that are projected in the field as is right now. Florida is now on the 2-seed line, and Alabama is now on the 4-seed line. As 5 seeds, we have Arkansas, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. Kentucky is at a 7. Georgia is at a 9. Excuse me. And then Texas A&M, Missouri, and Texas are all at 10 seeds. The last 4 to get byes, as of right now, Georgia, A&M, Missouri, Texas. So basically the lowest 9 seed is Georgia, is what he's saying. And then A&M, Mizzou, Texas, all 10 seeds. And then Auburn now squarely on the bubble as an 11 seed in the play-in game, first 4. So right now there's 11 teams projected in, Craig. Obviously, Auburn could go either way. It appears that Georgia, Missouri, A&M, Texas have kind of saved themselves. We saw some stuff where Missouri beat Tennessee this week, and Georgia took care of North Carolina yesterday. So they've kind of played themselves into having the right numbers to be in the field. We will see if anything shifts or changes dramatically up at the top to change that seating a little bit. Obviously, Florida just slid up to the 2-seed line, and I think they have a good opportunity to hold that. Once again, we're about to move into conference tournament time. We talked about this last week. Conference tournaments are the appetizer to March Madness. March Madness is here, in my opinion, when we get to conference tournaments. Yep. So we're essentially there at this point. We have one game standing in between now and then. And Auburn is the team to talk about because we don't know. They're going to make or break. Does it go 10 or 11?
Well, and then you had Bruce on this week. What was he on, CBS or ESPN? He was talking about, you know, Auburn. You know, he was talking about Miami of Ohio, the Oxford of the Midwest. I think they're 32-0 right now. Shout out to my buddy Gino, great alum, played defensive tackle for them at one time. But, you know, Bruce was out there saying that if Miami slips up in the tournament, that they should be totally out of the field. And, you know, is that dad trying to take care of his son, trying to make sure that Auburn stays in, or, you know, what I mean, I'm struggling with it. Is I know we're a deep conference. I know we're a strong conference, but it's sometimes just like I was critical of Alabama and Oklahoma when we're getting into the college football playoff. If you're dropping 7-8 before the SEC tournament, maybe it's not your time. Maybe you should give it a go in the NIT.
Great points and thoughts there from our friend Craig McMichael. It's 8:50 here on SEC Sunday Night. When we come back, Craig and I are going to play a game. And don't forget, we're still going to predict that South Carolina schedule game by game here on SEC Sunday Night. We'll be right back.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team.
This is SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chiefs Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live, here with you every week at 8 p.m. on the Chiefs Sports Network. We've talked to South Carolina Gamecocks tonight. We've been around the boards. We've talked about who is in and who maybe is in the NCAA tournament coming out of the SEC in men's basketball. Now, let's step back and lighten it up a little bit, because I want to play before we predict schedules. I want to have a little bit of fun here with Craig, because games are kind of my thing, and I enjoy the games. And so I want to see. Yeah, absolutely. And so I just want to have some fun. If any of our friends have joined us tonight, please feel free to jump on in over there in the chat box. I'll be watching out for you if you want to try to answer some of these questions. Craig, you are going to be guessing who I am as I describe myself, and all of these are active head coaches in the SEC.
Are these actual quotes from press conferences?
They're not quotes from press conferences. They're not quotes from press conferences. They're facts about God. Okay, let's begin here. I played both left field and wide receiver in college. Who do you think it is, Craig? If you would like a second hit, I'll be you think for a moment, and we'll move on to the second hit.
I would love a second hit.
I also won a national championship as a player, as a coach at my alma mater.
One more, please.
Look at that. Look at that. So we have played left field and wide receiver in college. We have won a national championship as a coach at the alma mater. And we played for a national championship as the coach of a Big Ten school.
Damn, I was going to say Sark, and then you said Big Ten school.
That
Alex Golsh.
That is incorrect. This would be one Kalen DeBoer. Kalen DeBoer, the left fielder, Kalen DeBoer.
Kalen DeBoer. Okay.
There you go. Absolutely.
Did he go to like Sioux Falls? Where did he go to school?
He went to Sioux Falls, and then he went
to Sioux Falls. There we go.
And then he won the national championship at Sioux Falls.
There we go. Then
he coached to Washington, and they played the national championship. Okay.
Sark was a quarterback. He wasn't a wide receiver.
Getting less hints here, Craig.
Less hints.
Okay.
First game player ever.
I am a defensive-minded coach, but I once coached running backs at the University of Georgia.
Defensive-minded coach. Once coached running backs at the University of Georgia. Yeah, coming back through. I know this one.
Yeah, come on. This one should just come to you.
Right.
It should come to you really, really fast.
It is. And it's not
because fast is also associated with this coach.
Right. Not hypo.
I'll give you the year was 2005 when this head coach was coaching running backs at the University of Georgia. I got to say, I'm really enjoying this game.
I'm really awful at this game, if you can't tell.
I'm having so much fun.
Is it a head coach?
Head coach. These are all active head coaches. I have five of them. This is number two, so don't worry.
This is fantastic.
Your pain is only 40% of the way through.
0 for 5 is coming. One more clue?
Let's see. What kind of clue can I give you here? He coaches at his alma mater. That should have given it away. Defensive coach at his alma mater. Coach running backs at Georgia in 05.
God, tell me because I don't know.
This is so easy. He likes his players to be really, really fast. This is one Kirby Smart, who flipped over to the other side of the ball for one year of his career.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
SEC head coach played for a national championship for an ACC school as a player.
Not Will Stein. Will Stein was an ACC player, but did not play for a school. Okay.
Don't overthink it, Craig. Don't overthink it. What night is it?
Shane Beamer at Virginia 1999.
There you go.
Played for a national championship, but they lost to Florida State.
He's 1 for 3, ladies and gentlemen. 1 for 3. We got two more here. This coach won 2 conference championships at a G5 school.
John Summerall.
Sandwiched in between stints in the SEC. So we know he's coached in the SEC for more than one school.
Uh-huh.
There's your next hint. You need another one?
Yeah, Summerall didn't win it at South Florida or at
2 conference championships for a G5 team.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, between stints in the SEC, this head coach has now been. This is going to give it away. An SEC.
Why are you Drinkwitz?
This head coach. Let me finish the clue.
All right, I'm trying.
He's been a head coach at 3 SEC schools.
Head coach at 3 SEC schools.
That's dead to rights giveaway.
Now, Lane's only been 2.
Has he?
Head coach. You said head coach at 3 SEC schools.
That's correct, sir. This is indeed Lane
Oh, Kiffin. God, it is Lane Kiffin because he's at Tennessee. Why did
you just flushed Tennessee. And all of this Lane Kiffin drama,
I forgot about
Knoxville.
Yep.
All right, one more for you.
Val Twitter is going to get after me.
There it is. Okay, this SEC head coach led the NCAA in passer rating and completion percentage.
Will Stein.
Incorrect. The year was 1996.
Josh Heupel. No, Josh Heupel was later because it was 2000 at Oklahoma. Steve Sarkisian did it at BYU.
That is correct, sir. That would be Steve Sarkisian.
Look at I see what I did there. I got better as we went on. I went through.
I love it.
60%. You know what they call that? That's called the gentleman's D right there.
That's
60%.
That's passing. There you go. The gentleman's D, ladies and gentlemen. All right. We're going to hit this quick bumper and go into our prediction segment of the South Carolina 2026 schedule.
ATC is go.
Thank you. Go.
ATC is go.
Copy, us is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
FTM is go.
Safety con is go.
FTU is go.
LRD is go.
FRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
It's SEC Sunday Night, presented by Hewitt Diamandouros. Visit hdlawsc.com. It's go time.
All right, it's time to shut it down here on SEC Sunday Night. But before we do that, we have to predict the schedule for South Carolina football in 2026. Craig, it starts out relatively easy for the Gamecocks with Kent State and Towson in weeks 1 and 2. Am I safe to say that we're both going to give them wins for both of those games?
You are correct, sir.
No Tulsa over Arkansas hot takes this week.
No Tulsa over Nope.
All right, week 3. Jeff Lebby and Mississippi State come to Columbia. I have South Carolina winning this game simply based on, like I said last week in the Arkansas matchup, I think there's still a talent gap between what South Carolina has, especially on the top end, and what Mississippi State is dealing with. What are your thoughts?
I think there's a gap in general when it comes to Jeff Lebby and Hale State. Give me the Gamecocks for the win and starting 3-0. Young Robert looking good, feeling good.
3-0 is a good momentum piece for Kendall Briles, Shane Beamer, and this Gamecocks team. I think it sets up beautifully in terms of the schedule to kind of get them off to get them off and running. You kind of have some hesitant to call it warm up, but you get a little bit of time to tweak and fine tune the offense with Lenore Sellers and Kendall Briles working together for the first time. Then week 4, you have to go to Tuscaloosa. I have this as a loss to Alabama. I'm still a little higher on Bama, and obviously we'll get to this down the road. I'm a little higher on Bama than most people because just as Matt said about the offensive line at South Carolina, you're going to have to see it to believe it. Is it going to be improved? For Bama to truly fall off the cliff, as some people want to predict and say, well, they're not going to the playoff this year, they're continuing to decline, et cetera, et cetera. I have to see it to believe it. So – South Carolina will not be afraid of Alabama because they've played them really tight the past couple of years and lost by a slim margin in both of those games. But I do think that Alabama finds a way.
Yeah, I think it's pretty tough to go into Bryant Denny and win. Just see my Bulldogs, who I can't remember the last time they've done that. So I'm taking the Tide.
Okay, Kentucky is up after that. New head coach in Will Stein. On the other side of the ball, though, I have some questions about Kentucky's defense heading into 2026. And so I'm going to give South Carolina this win. They get a rare back-to-back home game against Kentucky because of the 9-game schedule and the way things were rewritten. South Carolina beat Kentucky and Columbia last year. I think they'll do it again in 2026.
God, Kentucky's one of those teams that I've got them circled. I'm interested to see what Will Stein does. I feel like there's going to be some momentum and some feel-good nature to it. If this was at Kroger Field in Lexington, I think I'm taking the Wildcats. Because it's at Williams-Brice, I am taking the Gamecocks.
And the following week, South Carolina, this is week 6, has to go to Gainesville. We have no clue what Florida's going to be. We talked about Philo. Can he get it done? Is there enough there? I have South Carolina dropping this game. I think that Florida much like you just said about South Carolina and Kentucky, I think South Carolina and Florida actually have very comparable athletes in terms of the roster. I might even give South Carolina a little bit of a nod, although Florida did a heck of a job. Summerall did a great job in the portal. But because it's in the swamp, I think that gives a little bit of momentum. Florida's going to have some juice because it's Summerall's first year, and so that's going to be enough to be a shot in the arm of the fan base. And I think by week six here, they still have enough in their tank to come out in full force and make the swamp the intimidating environment that it can be.
Yeah, and if you look at it with Florida, like even under Billy Napier, they were pretty darn hard to beat in the swamp. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I've got Florida taking the win here.
The bye week is primely placed right in the middle of the season there for the Gamecocks. They move on to week eight. They host Tennessee. This has been a home team win series for the most part over the past 15 or so years. And so I'm going to take, just simply based off of that, questions at quarterback for Josh Heupel. I think that Knowles will come in and kind of do some things with that defense to kind of shore it up a little bit. But I have a lot of questions about quarterback. And if we don't see somebody come in and be accurate with the football, we know what happens in that type of offense. So I'm taking South Carolina at home because that's what history says is going to happen.
This is where we differ, my friend. I'm going to take Tennessee, and I don't have a great rhyme or reason. I've got a lot of questions even still about South Carolina, and I've got questions about, like, Tennessee. I'm going with a gut instinct on this one. You know, like, I wish I would have, like, this great analysis to say this is why I think the Vols are going to do that. Apparently, I've already forgotten about the Vols a number of times. See my Lane Kiffin response. But I do think that the Vols come in and knock off the Cox.
All right, so then after Tennessee, we have week nine. South Carolina goes to Oklahoma. This is – South Carolina destroyed Oklahoma in Norman 2 years ago. Obviously, the Sooners came in last year with a stronger team and took care of business in Columbia. I think South Carolina loses this game at Oklahoma simply because of Brent Venables and what that defense can do. Now, I will asterisk this one and say – if we don't see McCullough, the new running backs coach at Oklahoma, make a shift to get the running game off of John Mateer's shoulders, who knows who's calling the shots on offense for this Oklahoma team by the time they host South Carolina in week nine. And on the other side of the ball.
Are you calling for Arbuckle to get fired?
No. I'm not calling that at all. But we said last year, and even when we talked to our friend Travis Davidson, even after a playoff game, there was still a little bit of a question of, is this John Mateer's team? And were they going to go after another quarterback?
Yep.
So I just don't know by the time that we get to week nine, is he going to be pulled, but is he going to be banged up again? Because if he's the primary runner, we don't have a clue who Oklahoma's going to be by week nine if he gets banged up and is out of there. Okay. On the other side of the ball, if South Carolina and Kendall Browse and Lenore Sellers actually get clicking, and you don't have offense out of Oklahoma, it might not matter how good Brent Venables and the defense are, because you might not have to score that many points to outscore Oklahoma. That said, I did pick the Sooners. What are your thoughts?
Boomer Sooner. Even though I don't know if Norman knows you can run the ball or not. Maybe we should let them know. Maybe we'll have Brent on for our Oklahoma preview. We can let him know.
They play like they're still in the Big 12 sometimes.
They really do.
Okay, week 10, South Carolina hosts Texas A&M. Shane Beamer's been really good against Texas. Last year, lead was blown, obviously, but they played them better than just about everybody else on the schedule other than Texas. So, interesting matchup because this one's in Columbia. But there's a lot of talent on that Texas A&M roster, and we still have too many question marks, in my opinion, with South Carolina for me to just jump on this. So I'm going with a loss again to the Aggies.
Yep, I'm taking the Aggies as well. I do think the Aggies missed the playoffs in 2026.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking like 8-4, 9-3 again. For Aggies fans, that'll probably just be pain and familiarity. But I do think that they'll probably be a little bit better than what South Carolina is this year.
Then you go to Arkansas to try to get off the what we have predicted to be a little bit of a losing streak here. You have it as a 4-game losing streak. I have it as a 1-3 stretch. and this really going to be the make or break, it appears, for South Carolina. Going to Arkansas, we talked about this already. We picked this last week with Arkansas. And so I think South Carolina actually is going to win this game, even though going to Fayetteville sometimes can be an interesting trip. Just ask Tennessee a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. If you go into that environment, sometimes things get funky. Ask Texas from a few years ago before they were in the league. They went over there and got absolutely spanked by the Pit Boss. So I don't know about – we don't know about Ryan Silverfield either. We talked to Wes about it last week. So many question marks in these first-year head coaches. I don't trust it. So I'll go with Shane Beamer in year – wait for it. Six now?
It's nuts that he's been there 6 years. I cannot believe that.
Absolutely. But I'm going with a win for South Carolina.
And you know this is going to be like 11 or 11:45 Jefferson Pilot kick too. Like it's going to be there. You might get some ice. You might get some cold. It might be something weird.
Feels that way.
It really does. It does feel that way. I do feel like South Carolina though is further ahead of schedule than what Arkansas is. So South Carolina snaps that streak and does win in Fayetteville.
All right, hosting the Dogs, I think that Georgia is the best team on South Carolina's schedule, so I'll just go ahead and say I think that's a loss.
Yeah, you know, I would never underestimate Kirby Smart and Shane Beamer. Shane has always had good things to say about Kirby and the Dogs, talking about all the five-star talent from a few years ago. As long as the Athens Police Department isn't pulling anybody over, I'm saying the Dogs come out on top.
Probably. Yeah, week 12 is not when you want to play Georgia. Spurrier knew when to play them, and that's up at the front of the season.
It used to be early.
Really like week 2, week 3.
Yep.
All right, to close the season, obviously South Carolina is going to be at Clemson. Actually, during the Shane Beamer era, the road team has won for the most part in this rivalry series. And so I'm going to go against my better judgment here. And I'm going to pick South Carolina to beat Clemson in the Upstate because we've highlighted here. Matt told us a little bit about the talent that's on the roster, some pieces to watch. We can dive into the numbers of how Kendall Briles has improved offenses everywhere he's been across his career. And I have, if I'm being honest, I have a lot of questions as it stands right here today on March 1st of 2026 about this Clemson roster and what Dabo Swinney should really feel are the realistic expectations for that team. We have a long way to go before Thanksgiving, Craig. But if I'm sitting here today and I have to look at it, history says that while Shane Beamer's been in South Carolina, that the road team has won this game. And then I look at the talent, it's at least pretty even, and I might even give the nod to South Carolina there. So I'm gonna give them that. I'm gonna lean that way for the win.
William Christopher Sweeney made a change at his offensive coordinator spot. He's getting the band back together. He's got Chad Morris back there. There also is one more lawsuit against the NCAA. One Chandler Morris from the University of Virginia is suing for a 12th year of eligibility. It may not be 12, but hey, you saw me read the boards and you know, something I can't like count. That. I think Mr. Morris comes back to Clemson, plays for his daddy, and knocks off South Carolina and sends Shane packing, and South Carolina goes on the job hunt for 2026 coaching carousel.
There you have it. Craig has South Carolina at 5-7. I have them at 7-5. According to Matt Anderson, it may take 8 wins to save Shane Beamer's job, so neither one of us would have them predicted to be in that range. I'll say here on the record, I love Shane Beamer. I think he's a phenomenal football coach. I think he is a fantastic fit for the South Carolina Gamecocks. And so my hope would be that obviously not even as a fan, but just as an analyst of SEC sports, when you look at fit and culture, I think that just like Sam Pittman in Arkansas, Shane Beamer really fits in Columbia, South Carolina. And so I would hope that they win enough games to keep him there to continue trying to climb the ladder. That is the difficult SEC. Casey chimes in. He wasn't with us tonight, but he does have a comment that he would like to see Kendall Briles as the head coach. Okay. Thanks, Casey. We appreciate you. Shout out to you for always being here for us. My name's Rob Williams. He's Craig McMichael. This is SEC Sunday Night live here every week with you. at 8 p.m. We'll be back next week, as always, continuing to work our way through the SEC. We'll see what kind of games I come up with there. Shout out to Matt Anderson for being here with us tonight, and all of our friends, MBG and Freezing Cold Takes, for taking care of us. We'll see you next time.